Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And we are live in downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Poker Room. And welcome to the final table. I'm Paul Harris. Dennis Phillips is to my right. Together last year, we won $4.6 million in the poker world. Dennis won over $4.5 million himself in the main event of the World Series of Poker. And this weekend, we were out in Las Vegas. You invited me to be part of your team for the Dream Team event.
Absolutely did. It reminds me, you know what the old trivia question used to be? Who was the winningest left-hander's brother combination in the majors?
Dizzy Dean and
well,
brother?
Actually wasn't, but the answer used to be Christy Mathison. He had a brother that was 0-1. Anyhow, back to the total poker winnings here.
Yeah.
And by the way, congratulations, Paul. You kicked my tail out there on it. I was the first one of our team to be eliminated at the Dream Team event.
Yeah.
As you can tell from my voice, I was cheering them on a little bit.
We had a fun weekend at this event, which drew 444 players.
Yes.
Which is what, 146 or 7
something
teams?
Like that.
48,
whatever, yeah.
148
yeah.
teams, I guess. Mm-hmm. And a lot of pros out there. Congratulations to Jamie Gold.
Yep.
His team was the winner of the team event at this Dream Team event this
yep.
weekend. As a matter of fact, later on this hour, we'll have the woman who was, we had two teams out there. Dennis had
right.
put two teams into this event, a guy's team and a gal's team. And Lisa Parsons was the longest lasting on the women's team. Very, very, very good player.
Yeah.
She, in fact, was the next to last woman knocked out last summer. In the main
yes.
event.
I think it was 76 she finished or something
yeah,
like
that. Something yeah. like that.
And not to say between the two teams who did best, but we didn't.
Yeah.
And between two teams, you guys figure it out.
Lisa finished 11th. I was the last of the guys, and I went out in 99th place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We
Still outlasted you, though.
Absolutely. We were not any of the first ones out.
Anyway, Jamie Gold and his girlfriend, Ashley.
Uh-huh.
It's funny because Jamie knocked Lisa out. And a very loose hand. We're going to talk to Lisa
yeah,
about
yeah.
that a little bit later on. When you hear what Jamie played, you go, yeah, that's Jamie.
Yeah, no kidding.
Ashley was at my table. I had a very interesting table. Before she knocked me out, we played together for, I don't know, about 45 minutes or so. But it was me and Ashley and a female pro named Beth Shack.
Yep, yep.
Very, very talented. And a couple of other very attractive women. And Phil Hellmuth.
Okay, how did you get that table?
I don't know. They all came to my table. I think
wow.
they all said, please, can you seat me with a bald, fat guy, middle-aged preferably? And boom, there I was, ready to go.
Well, shoot, that qualifies me. I didn't have any. Oh, well.
But I did get to experience the Phil Hellmuth magnetism.
Yeah.
You know, say what you want about this guy. And I'm not particularly a fan of Phil. I think his antics, particularly last year at the World Series of Poker main event, where he was berating other players and calling them idiots and that sort of thing, I think that that's absolutely horrible for the game of poker. I know he has the bad boy image, the poker brat image. Fortunately, none of that showed up on Saturday. But all of that has made him into, you know, probably the biggest name in poker. If not the biggest name, one of the top 10 names in poker. And that brings people around. And so my table was surrounded by people for the 2 or 3 hours that I was playing with Phil.
Yep, I don't doubt it. You can almost follow the crowd when you follow Phil because he draws the attention to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you respect his game or not, and he does play a very good game.
I saw him lay down queens on a 10-high board when he had raised preflop and somebody bet into him. The flop was 10-9-7.
Yep.
With two hearts. And somebody bets into him, and he went into the tank thinking about it for about a minute and talking out loud, saying, I really don't know where I am here. I have no yeah. idea what you have. I have no idea what you have. And he exposed the queens and laid them down and folded. And I thought, that's a very strong play. Now, I want to ask you, why does he do that? This is midway through the tournament. He's in no risk of being knocked out by this guy who had a shorter stack than him. Why does he do that?
Well, several reasons could be possible. I wasn't there or anything. You never want to get crippled or you never want to bleed down your chips. Never look down at your chips and say, oh, I can afford this, you know, and throw in a handful, a third of them, a quarter of them, whatever it happens to be. That might have been part of it. I think he was probably fishing for information. He is very good at tells. I bet you he had a read on this gentleman and thought this gentleman was very strong. Mm-hmm. And if nothing else, he was on a massive draw. Now, can you imagine if he would have had filled in the gut shot and had two hearts or whatever the suit was? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you got a straight draw, a flush draw. It's about a coin flip right there.
Yeah.
So it's easier and it's better to lay down a couple of winners than to lose your entire tournament by calling the wrong time.
Yeah. Even if it's not a matter of losing your whole stack, you could lose a considerable amount of chips.
Yeah, maybe the guy had jacks. Maybe the guy had ace, 10, or whatever the top card was. You know, so what? There's always another hand. You go in when you're positive and you're comfortable. If you're uncomfortable with a hand, whatever you happen to have, odds are it's best to fold it.
And Phil likes to play the ones where he puts his chips in when he has way the best of it.
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely.
He's not one of these guys who's going to play a 54-46 coin flip all of his chips.
Absolutely not. He prefers to get in there when he is an 80-20 favorite, when he knows he can do it. And then he loves, as he says, to play weak, to send out the reverse signals,
yep,
to try and pretend, to try and get the person to call when he's sitting there with a monster.
Yeah, it was very interesting playing with him. He and I only got involved with two hands. I took 3,000 chips off of him in one. He took 3,000 chips off of me in the other.
There you go.
It wasn't a matter of mutual respect. It was, I think, in both cases, neither of us really had anything.
Okay.
It's not like I forced him off a big hand or he forced me off a big hand. It was just a fairly standard play.
No queen 10?
No queen
10. Ah, darn.
No.
Oh, well.
So anyway, we had a wonderful time out there. Some of the other pros who were there, Jerry Yang, who was two years ago, the 2007 main event champion, was there, went out fairly quickly. Christy Gazes was there, Joe Seabach, who you know,
yep,
Barry Greenstein's son. Tom McAvoy was out there, Gavin Smith, a whole bunch of very good players. And congratulations again to Jamie Gold and his team, who won first place in the team side of this, but there was also an individual competition.
Correct.
And by the way, Jamie's girlfriend outlasted him at the final table.
To be truthful, and maybe it's a thing, it's coming in the future, who knows, there was a larger percentage of women when you got down into the money than I've seen in almost any tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Some very high-quality play there by the young ladies, and my hat's off to them.
Absolutely. I just like playing with attractive women at my table.
Well, okay. Well, who doesn't?
Some of them actually got more attention than Phil Hellmuth for like 4 seconds.
Oh, wow.
They got a lot of attention from Phil Hellmuth as well. By the way, Jamie Gold, who I've mentioned a couple of times, I ran into him last night at a blackjack table at Caesars because I just flew back this morning. You flew back yesterday. But I ran into him at a blackjack table at Caesars last night with Ashley, his girlfriend, and he said he absolutely wants to come on the show. We're just going to work out a date. I think probably in about 3 weeks we'll have Jamie
on
to talk about that, the 2006 main event champion. What else do we want to talk about here right off the top? Oh, I played in a tournament at Bellagio on Sunday, their big 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon tournament with a $540 buy-in. And I played well enough that out of 50 players, I made it down to the final table. And at that point, you and Joe McGowan, the poker coach, who's coming up with his segment here in just a couple of minutes, came up and gave me some advice. And I kind of made some mental notes, but I thought it would be good if you talked a little bit here today for our listeners who play a lot of tournaments. Talk about that late tournament strategy, because people may know what you should do at the beginning of a tournament or how to play in the middle. But when you get down to a final table, you have experience at doing that, mm-hmm, not just in the main event last year, but all the final tables you've played in your career. So talk a little bit about how that's different from the other stages of a poker tournament.
Well, it's quite a bit different, especially as your table gets less. You go from 8 to 7 to 6 to 5. You expand the hands that you open with. If beforehand your minimum hand was a queen 8 that you would even consider going in on, you may expand it now. All of a sudden you could be raising with questionable hands previously. You have a 7-8 of spades. You have that ace 9. You have a lot of different hands there. There are definitely raisable hands when you're short stacked or short around the table. The other thing that most people don't do is you've got to be aware of the chip stack in front of each of the players on it, because that makes such a difference. You have to, if you don't want to call, be able to give the players behind you fold equity for the small and the big blind. If this guy only has 6 big blinds left, he's going to go in with almost any 2 cards. So you're making some mid-raise ahead of him. Just expect that you're calling off all of your chips is what you're doing on it.
Or calling off at least as much as he has in front of him.
Exactly, that's right.
So you and Joe were telling me, and I didn't know about this because I don't play nearly as many tournaments as you guys do, that late tournament chip stack strategy that you're talking about means you're more likely to be going after middle stacks.
Absolutely.
You don't want to play up against the big stacks unless you've got a heck of a hand, is what you told me. But the short stacks can be trouble. Play against the middle stacks because they're a little bit nervous as you approach the bubble, right?
You find the people that are going to get hurt if they make a mid-raise. So you do a 3X raise out there, and they're looking down. They make that, that's going to cripple them. It's going to make them one of the shorter ones. It's going to make them now all of a sudden have to play a little different. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are probably not going to come back at you unless they have a premium hand. So if you have that queen jack of diamonds and you have two guys behind you that have those middle range stacks, you can actually play against them fairly easily.
Do you also find that as you're getting down towards the money where people are going to make some cash as opposed to going out without making it into into the money, that they play a little bit differently? And some actually go into lockdown thinking, I'm not going to play a single hand
here. Oh, absolutely, which is the wrong way to do it. I don't play anymore just to make the money. I mean, I can see the reasoning behind it. In some cases, just making the money is a substantial check.
If you're the short stack and you can squeeze in like Kelly Kim did.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Everybody thought he'd go out in ninth place. He managed to stick around one extra hand and made eighth place money, which was $100,000.
$372,000, but who's counting?
Okay.
All right. Yeah, by playing tight, by folding away all those, he actually creeped into eighth place, and that was a huge, huge difference
for him. But what about guys who are in middle stack position or are the chip leader or second chip leader? Do they go into lockdown too most of the time?
Again, it depends upon the individual player. The people in the middle are the ones that are more likely to go to lockdown. Therefore, they're the ones you can play against a little easier and have a higher probability of them folding.
So does that mean you can play a wider range of cards against guys like
that? I do. I love it when you get down close to the bubble. Because if you have a decent chip stack, if you're the chip leader at your table, you can go. You can really have some fun. I've been down to Tunica when it was getting close to the bubble, when maybe there's 21 people left in the pay in 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people not look at their cards. Literally, no matter what cards you deal, they just push them back. I'm not in. I have enough here that I guarantee somebody else is going to go out before me.
Mm-hmm.
I can let it go around the table three times and still be all right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not playing any two cards.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong way to do it, I think.
Particularly when you're losing blinds and antes there.
Exactly, exactly. You're bleeding down so that when they do get down to the bubble, when they do get into the money, you have nothing left, or you maybe donkeyed off a quarter or a third of your chips.
All right, we are live at the Lumiere Place Poker Room in downtown St. Louis. That's why we call this the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips from Team Poker Stars Pro. Poker Stars, one of the sponsors of our show every week, and we're proud to have them along. And you played a little bit on Poker Stars this weekend.
I did, absolutely.
Most Sunday afternoons people can find you on Poker Stars, right?
You can find me on Poker Stars quite often. I play there as often as I can. On Sunday when you were in the tournament early on, I was sitting in front of my computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to learn the game. It's a great way to develop your skills. And it doesn't make any difference what level you want to play, what game you want to play, or what time you want to play. Go to PokerStars.net. That is the site, the largest in the world, in which you can find anything you want. I don't care. You want to play Omaha? Go to PokerStars.net. You want to play a high stakes? Go to PokerStars.net. You want to learn the game? Go to PokerStars.net.
You want to try some tournament strategy? Play a few for free.
There you go. Absolutely.
There you go. Poker Stars, one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Plays Final Table, which continues in a moment with the poker coach, Joe McGowan, up next on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Whether you play poker in a home game, a cash game in a casino, or online, this is the show for you. It's the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Still to come in this hour, Gavin Griffin, who was at one point the youngest guy to ever win a bracelet in the World Series of Poker. Illinois guy who's made it big in the world of poker. Also, we'll be joined by Lisa Parsons, who was the last member of one of the two Team Dennises at the Dream Team event this weekend. Beat the other five of us. Here, by the way, is the third member of the guys' team this weekend. It was Dennis Phillips, Paul Harris, and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Dennis. How you guys doing?
Good.
Pretty good.
Good. Thanks for having me again.
It's always a pleasure having you on here. What kind of poker strategy tips do you want to share with us this week?
Well, getting into what you guys were just talking about, I had something probably to add about the bubble. Dennis, you know, of course, came in third. I came in somewhere around 500th or so, and the money, I think, was it 666, Dennis, was the money bubble for the main event?
Yep.
And I believe that bubble this year was 21,000. Two, 3 years ago, you got your money back. If I'm correct, I'm going off memory here, it was 10,000. So it was a little bit of a bigger deal, and it's a real amazing time in a tournament where a lot of players will debate calling with kings preflop, even coming into the pot if they're real short. I think truly there are some people that fold aces preflop that just do not want to get involved because they're so short and they want that $21,000. So it's a time where probably people like Dennis, a little bit myself, I'll try to if I have the chips, but there's one player at every table that is dying for the bubble to come and to get close to it, to take advantage of that tight play where people will not enter a pot if they're short stack for sure, just like you guys are talking about, mid stack for sure, but the short stacks as well. So it's a fun time in a tournament where you can really chip up. People do not want to come into those pots at all. They want to make the money when it's a significant amount of money.
And
the main
Joe,
event, it's a fun time.
Joe, does that also mean that, for instance, if you're on the button or you're in the cutoff seat one before the button and you've got a couple of those players who qualify for what you guys were talking about, they kind of got middle stacks and it looks like they're in lockdown mode, you might be able to steal their blinds with any two cards?
Oh, it would be any two cards without any question. And here's the other funny thing. I moved up two pay levels. I don't think I even made it an hour or so. I'm going off memory again. I don't think I made it an hour after the bubble. But to get to the bubble, to lose, say, five players might have taken 2 hours. And the bubble hit and it broke, so now everyone's going to get paid. I don't know how many we lost. It might have been 100 players we lost in an hour.
It's
just an unbelievable difference from the final 2 hours. It's torture. You know, it's hand by hand. Oh, we got an all-in on table 22. Everyone goes running over to table 22. There's 100 people watching the hand, hoping for the poor guy to get knocked out, which is a horrible spot to be in. That hand finally happens. The whole place erupts. The poor guy goes out with his tail between his legs, you know, a tough spot. Many times they'll give him a free entry for the next year, the true bubble boy. So really, the bubble boy is the one before that, which gets zero, which gets nothing. But as soon as that bubble breaks, the guy that was folding kings, honestly, is happy to get, if he's short, he's happy to have ace-10. The next hand, he goes all in. It's an unbelievable funny thing that really isn't talked about too much.
Well,
as far as
part of the reason behind that, you've got a mess of people there that look up there, and all of a sudden the next 80 people are going to get the same amount. And they've been short stack, and they've been playing so tight, and they've anteed off a third of their chips, and, you know, it's time to either make a move and get some chips or get out.
So moving up 3, 4, or 5 spaces means nothing to them.
Absolutely nothing at this time. So
interesting.
And as you're going along, for our listeners, even in smaller tournaments, you might fish around for that information as you're coming up to it. You know, how'd you qualify? Oh, I got in on a $5, you know, satellite, you know, whatever tournament that you're in. You know, oh, I got in on this, or I don't care, you know, I'm a whatever that's successful. I'm a doctor, and I, you know, bought in, and I've played 8 tournaments today, and they don't care about money. Well, they're not going to care. You know, they're going to play back at you, perhaps, and they're active in the pots. But try to identify quickly who you think are going to be the people that are going to tighten up. And you'll notice pretty easily because they're just not going to play any hands the final couple levels if they're trying to eke into that money spot.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. You mentioned before people playing ace-10, and you mentioned it almost like that's a hand that people play when they might not, it might not be proper to play that. And one of the things you and I talked about a little bit over the weekend is the idea of playing aces and when it's appropriate to play ace-rag, ace-middle, you know, or the bigger ones. Talk a little bit about that because I think you've got some great tips on that.
Sure. Okay. Well, you know, I think the standard answer is forever. It depends, and it always depends.
Right.
But in general, let's talk a little bit more about, say, cash games. in general, you know, a lot of people will say, I'd like ace deuce, ace three, ace four, ace five. They like that hand better than they like ace nine, ace eight, ace seven, ace six. And, you know, you say, why? They're like, well, you can make a wheel. I always joke around, well, when's the last time you made a wheel? You know, if I asked you guys, honestly, when's the last time? And when you make a wheel, you're going to say wheel. You're going to roll it over and say wheel. I don't have a memory of making a wheel. I mean, it's probably been like a couple of years, although probably because I try not to play those hands too often. But certainly, you know, a very skilled player can play 7-4 or 7-deuce or any two cards. But in general, for our kind of entry-level players, beginners, and intermediate players, I strongly recommend they stay away from the ace little because they're likely going to be in pots where they're dominated and they flop an ace or their kicker, the 5, the deuce, the 3-4. You know, they're in big, big trouble, and they have no idea where they're at, a little bit like the Phil Hemmings story. You know, he folded the queens, even though he has an overpair to the board, but he has no idea where he's at. You know, you have ace four, you're potentially thinking about that wheel, but it never happens. You flop an ace, I mean, everything beats you, and if it's a multi-way action pot, you know, you might call one off, and now you're involved, and you might pick up a straight draw on the turn, so you take another one off, and all of a sudden, you know, siphoned off 10% of your chips. In general, I would strongly recommend for our listeners, for the most part, to stay away from that hand. You know, if you're in late position, it's unraised. You know, if you want to take a shot and you think the small blind and big blind, you want to pick up the blinds if that's worth it to you in a cash game where it's not really as important because people typically sit a whole lot deeper than what the blinds are if you're playing like a 2-5 game, you know, to pick up the $7. You know, I'm always trying to stack somebody. I very rarely am interested in picking up the blinds. Then you'd get into, you know, the ace-6, ace-7, ace-8, ace-9. I'd rather play the ace-9 than ace-4, even though I could make the wheel. The other problem is with the wheel, if you have ace-5 ball, you know, flop can come deuce-3-4. What about the guy that has 5-6? You can't make the nuts. You make a straight, you flop your dream hand. But there are people that play 5-6, and I would much rather have 5-6, believe it or not, than ace-5, certainly in a cash game.
In fact, now, as you move up, Dennis will bear me out on this, as you move up the ladder from the kind of beginner-level games to the bigger games and then into the even bigger games, you're much more likely to run into 5-6 than you are aces.
Right. And you're going to win bigger pots with 5-6 than you are even aces.
Yep.
And without a doubt, you're going to win bigger pots and have an easier time with 5-6 than you are ace-4 or ace-8. And you're going to lose a lot of money with that ace-8. If you think back just to yourself, Dennis and Paul, you know, your pots that you've won big, big pots with in cash games, it's pocket nines, it's 5-6, you know, pocket jacks.
10-8, 9-7, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be ace-4. You know, it could be, but, you know, in the long run, that's going to be very, very rare that it's ace-8 you win this monster pot with. Sure, anything can happen, but in general, those hands get you in a whole lot more trouble than what they're worth.
Yeah, now, really, really what you're hoping for there is if you could play like ace-8, even if it's ace-8 suited, what are you hoping to flop? A pair of eights. And then you're hoping that somebody else has whatever the other card is out there. Let's say it comes king-8-8. You're hoping somebody's playing with a king while you flop the trip eights, and now you're going to get some money in there. But unless that happens, you're probably not going to know where you are with ace-8.
Right. Even the ace-8 suited, you know, no question, I'll play that a lot. I'll be happy to try to, you know, see a cheap flop if I can with any suited ace. But you flop four to the flush, you know, you're behind. You know, you're behind the pocket tens, you know, and hopefully your ace is live if you hit that ace. You know, hopefully the person doesn't already have two pair or a set. So it's not, you know, it's an overplayed hand. Ace suited is also an overplayed hand. You have to be really, really careful with in a cash game. You know, I'm not telling everybody to play like a nit, but in general, you know, really solid, good cash game play is throwing away the ace little and, you know, the ace mids. A lot of people would say, well, Joe, you know, I'll raise with that hand, you know. Well, I don't really like that either because now the range of hands that's going to call you is going to be what? You know, if you get a reasonably solid player and now you look down at ace-10, you know, are you going to call, Paul, with ace-10? You know, a fairly good player that raised in mid-position? I'm not going to call with ace-10, but I'm going to call him with ace-king, right?
Yep.
Are you with me? I may call him with ace-queen. I'm probably going to throw away ace-jack, you know, but the range of hands that call you with have you dominated and have you beat. So I just think the hands are big, big trouble hands. Without any doubt, that I think our listeners should try to stay away from. And,
all right.
You know, I'd try to come in with, a pocket pairs, trying to flop a set, the 5-6s, 7-8s, the little suited connectors. Even if it's not suited, 5-6 unsuited, I like to play, because sometimes the flush draw, like I said, even with the nut flush draw, can get you in trouble. Either you flop, open-ended and maybe take one off or get a free card, or you bet it on the come, might be fine if you have that image and you hit it, you can get paid a lot. You can really you could stack somebody. You can get a whole stack that way. So, that's just a little bit of thought for our listeners, and try to play a little bit more solid. Try not to be so reckless. Try not to play so many hands. It's attractive for people to come in. Anytime they see an ace, they want to come into the pot. All of a sudden, they're siphoning off chips, and their chip stack's going down. Protect those chips and wait for, good spots with good hands where you can really make some big pots with flopping sets and flopping straights. Flushes people see. Dennis and Paul, people see the flush on the board. You don't get paid as much. If you have, 8-10 and both cards play for a straight, it's pretty hard to put you on that, and you can usually get paid pretty good. So it's just something for our listeners to think about going forward and trying to make a little bit more money and keep their chips a little bit more safe.
Well, as usual, some very good advice from Joe here. Again, I apologize, everybody, about my voice. I enjoyed Vegas a little too much this weekend.
Yes, you did.
had some fun. I'll put part of the blame on Paul and Joe on that. But good advice. We are not, by the way, recommending that you play every 5-6 that you get.
No.
Choose your
Correct.
Positions, lay position,
Correct.
Decent chip stacks, the usual stuff that way. But they are hands that can be very profitable. Just play intelligent. That's what we're trying to tell you.
There you go. All right, Joe, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate it, guys.
That's
right,
the poker coach, Joe McGowan, here at the Lumiere Plays Final Table with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips. And coming up next, a young guy from Illinois who has really been making big news in the poker world over the last few years. At one point, he was the youngest player ever to win a bracelet at the WSOP. Coming up here on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by Burdell Remodeling. That's Ron Burdell's company that does home improvements on the Metro East so well that they've won awards for doing it. They got the Best Interior Award from the Home Builders Association. And in these times of people wondering about the value of their home, one of the ways you can increase that value for resale or just increase the value to you, the homeowner, is to fix up that basement, to fix up that kitchen, to fix up that bathroom, to put on a room addition. Burdell Remodeling does all of that. And if you'll go to their website, athomewithron.com, you can find out not only the kind of jobs that Ron Burdell and his crew do, but also see testimonials from some of the people who they've done work for. That's one of the best ways, by the way, to hire somebody in the remodeling business. That is word of mouth from satisfied customers. You want to know that one of your neighbors had great work done by Ron and the rest of the Burdell Remodeling staff. You want to know that they've got satisfied customers for all the jobs that they've done. Go to the website, see what other people are saying, and then get in touch with Ron. AtHomeWithRon.com, your full-service remodel company, is Burdell Remodeling. And we're back right after this.
It's Poker on Your Radio. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS. Now, here are two guys giving off reverse tells and trying to take your stack, Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Broadway Truck Centers, the company that still employs Dennis Phillips. That's the question you get asked more than any other. Are you still working?
It absolutely is. I have the same job as when I left because I've got the same people down there I'm working with. It's Broadway Truck Centers. BroadwayTruck.com, 314-241-9140. It's a company I work for, a company I'm proud to say that I'm associated with. Down there, they can take care of it, and they fix it, and fix it right the first time. They have the longest hours in St. Louis for the service department. They take care of all your trucking needs. I don't care if it's service, if it's part, if it's rental. If you happen to have a little fender bender, they will take care of it. And the selling end of it, which was my end of it. It's a pickup, it's a van, it's a bigger truck, makes a difference what it is, we will take care of it. And we customize them to your needs. Broadway Truck Centers, located on Broadway, just south of the Arch. Come on down and see us sometime, guys.
Before I introduce our next guest, a couple of quick announcements. Next week, this show is moving back 1 hour. It's like some sort of weird delayed daylight savings time shift for us. Because of the Cardinal season starting next week, KFNS is going to have a pregame show on from 6 to 7, five nights a week. And so we're moving the show back to 7 o'clock Central Time on Tuesdays. For those of you who are listening to this show in the podcast, available for download on thechipleader.com, that's Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, you'll still get it at the same time, which is on demand anytime. And if you go to thechipleader.com, there's a link you can click on and automatically subscribe to these shows via podcast, via iTunes. So that's one quick announcement. And the other one is, if you've got questions for Dennis that you would like us to talk about on this show, a hand that you played in a cash game, a hand that you played in a home game or in a tournament or whatever, we're going to be doing a show probably in the middle of April that'll be all listener questions. We'll take phone calls. We won't have any guests on there. We'll have Joe doing his poker tip segment because that's so popular. But we'll do just emails and phone calls. So now's your chance to get them in. And the email address for that is DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. All right, who's tonight's guest?
Tonight, Gavin Griffin, gentleman that I've been lucky enough to meet and lucky enough not to have to play too often either. Made his reputation a few years ago. He was the youngest person ever to win a World Series bracelet. Did that in 04. Has followed it up. He has won another tournament in Monte Carlo. Won the same one that's coming up in about 3 weeks that I'm looking at going at. Won it in 07, and then he followed it up in 08 over at the Borgata. He won the WPT, a World Poker Tour. To my knowledge, he is the only person to win each of these three type events: a bracelet with a World Series of Poker, a World Poker Tour, and an EPT, a European Poker Tour.
You're saying he can play?
This sucker can play, let me tell you. There's no doubt about it.
Gavin, welcome to the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. Congratulations on all of your success. Tell us a little bit about Monte Carlo, because Dennis is thinking about going and playing in that EPT event. And when I hear Monte Carlo, I think of James Bond and guys in tuxedos playing Baccarat.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we don't actually play the tournament at the casino in Monte Carlo. I guess fortunately and unfortunately. So we don't have to wear tuxes to play, but we also don't get to play in what is probably the most famous casino in the world. You can head down there and check it out. I actually haven't done that either the 2 years I've been there. 2007, I was a little busy playing, and last year was basically my debut event as a Team Poker Stars pro. So I was pretty busy doing interviews and getting to know people and hanging out with the other Team Poker Stars pros and all that kind of stuff that goes along with that. So maybe this year, if I get a chance, I'll head over there, rent a tux and head in. But Monte Carlo is beautiful. It's, right on the ocean. The weather is really nice when we're there. And there's not necessarily a whole lot of nightlife or anything like that, but I'm not really a nightlife kind of guy anyway. So it's pretty cool. The hotel we're at is very nice. And have a player's lounge at the event center, so you can kind of hang out with people who are there to play and the other Team Poker Stars pros and really enjoy yourself there.
You know, one of the things I learned about you as I was reading up on your bio is that you started playing a little bit of poker when you were in college and getting your butt kicked regularly by your friends, and then you decided to pick up a couple of poker books and learn from some of these pros whose names we all know. So what did you read? What made you a better poker player?
Well, the first book I read was one that I will tell people not to read as your first book from now on. It is The Theory of Poker by David Sklansky. It's a great book. Don't get me wrong. I still think it's one of the best books ever written on poker. But it's not a good first book to read. It's pretty heavy. There's just a ton of information in there. And you should probably kind of work your way up to getting that kind of information. And then another one that I read back then was Championship No Limit and Pot Limit Hold'em by Tom McAvoy and TJ Cloutier.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which has some good information. I kind of, for a while, wasn't really reading books critically. So I would say, this book everything is, I'm going to follow everything in it. And there is good information in that book. It's not like the be-all, end-all of poker books, but I believe in learning from everything. You know, I'm not saying that Championship No Limit and Pot Limit Hold'em is a bad book. I'm saying even if there's like a bad book on the market, you can still learn from it. You can learn what not to do, right? So
as long as you recognize that it's a bad book, and you, as you're reading it, you go, well, I'm not doing that.
Exactly. That, and that's why people ask me all the time, you know, what books do you suggest? I said, you know, you can learn from any book that, as long as you read critically and think about what you're reading and really then take what the information you've learned from each book, work it over in your mind and kind of decide what makes sense, what doesn't make sense, what you can apply, what you can't apply, and then, you know, kind of move forward from there.
Talking with Gavin Griffin here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips. Are you just a tournament player, or do you play cash too?
I try to play a lot of games. Lately, I've been playing mostly cash games. Ever since the LA Poker Classic ended, I've pretty much just playing cash games online, on PokerStars.com, and I've been playing mostly like small level Pot Limit Omaha, partially to try to, you know, figure out the game a little bit, and also, you know, because I think it's a profitable game. So, but you know, I play.
Wait. Hold on a second here. You're starting to learn Pot Limit Omaha. You may remember that 5 years ago you won a bracelet in PLO at the World Series of Poker.
No, I won a bracelet in Pot Limit Hold'em, actually.
Oh, Pot Limit Hold'em. I'm sorry. No. I thought it was Pot Limit. I didn't.
No.
I apologize. So you're learning PLO, Pot Limit Omaha now.
Right. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm starting to learn it. I'm just, you know, kind of perfecting my strategy towards the game and kind of learning it more. I've played Pot Limit Omaha for kind of a long time. It was a popular cash game in some of the games I played it in Texas when I was going to school. So, you know, I've been playing it for a while. I just have been, you know, trying to figure out what problem, you know, I'm always learning. I'm always trying to learn. So when I say I'm learning Pot Limit Omaha, you know, I'm still learning No Limit Hold'em. I'm still learning tournaments. I'm still learning everything. It's just, I'm always trying to learn at poker, and that's kind of what I'm in right now.
Well, that's an excellent point. You will never perfect the game, as they say. And the fact that your age, you still got that attitude, you're still learning, you're still going to school, a little scary. Why don't you stay away from me at some of these tournaments? I'm not sure I want to play against you. Hey, another question. Now, you've been a team pro for a full year now. Kind of enlighten us. What's been your major changes this last year? How has that affected it? Does it affect the play that people play against you at a table? Any changes that you've noticed?
I wouldn't say that it affects the way people play against me too much. People have been kind of, you know, the first time I was on TV was 5 years ago. So people have seen the way I play on TV, you know, for a while. And I've noticed, you know, obviously since then that things have changed. But I wouldn't say like becoming a member of Team Poker Stars Pro really changed the way people play against me. As far as my lifestyle, I've done a lot of traveling in the last year. I went to 6 European Poker Tour events. I went
six
to Australia.
Them?
What's that?
Wow. 6 of them? Wow.
Yeah, 6 of them. Yeah. And then
Freaking
I went to Australia.
Flyer miles. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's kind of a good thing and a bad thing. I've got the, you know, platinum American Airlines status. So
there you go.
I never thought I'd get anything like that. You know, I'm mostly a homebody. You know, I like to hang out with my girlfriend Kristen at home.
You know, you travel a lot when they let you on the plane before the pilot.
There you
right,
go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm boarding with children and old people who need assistance. So that means
there you go.
Then I guess.
Yeah,
I think that means I'm boarding with you, Dennis.
There you go. Absolutely. Me and my cane. But, hey, the one thing I got to ask you, I got to know this. If you're going back to Monte Carlo, What color is your hair going to be this year? Is it going to be pink again?
As far as I know, my hair will be just some normal color of brown, whatever it is.
Okay.
You know, whatever my hair color was when I was born, I guess is what it's going to be in Monte Carlo.
Well, what most people don't realize is that you're a strong supporter of a number of charities, breast cancer being one of them. And when he went over to Monte Carlo, he dyed his hair pink just to show the support for it. And
very
you've been
cool.
in a lot of other charities and that, and I applaud you for it. I think it's an excellent way to conduct your life. You've given your support, or had said you credit a lot of your success with support of friends and family and your girlfriend. And it's nice the way you keep your feet on the ground, Griffin.
Yeah, way to go,
really
Gavin.
Like it, Gavin.
Yeah. And by the way, nice representation of the Midwest in everything you're doing.
Thank you. Nice
to see an Illinois boy doing very well. And we appreciate
you
coming on the show today. Thanks a lot.
Just so you know, I'm not a Cubs fan. I'm a White Sox fan. So
I'm liking it better all the time.
Yeah.
This is our – and I have – I'll tell you what. You make it to St. Louis, I got tickets to a Cardinal game anytime you want. How's that?
All right. Great. I don't know. My family might get upset at me because my entire family are Cubs fans. It's just –
Well,
don't
so
tell
I'll
them.
I'll have to not tell them that I'm going.
There you go.
Okay, no problem.
Gavin Griffin from Team Poker Stars Pro joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. When we come back, we will talk with a woman who was the second longest-lasting woman in the World Series of Poker main event last year and was the longest-lasting at the Dream Team Poker of the two Team Dennis teams that we had this weekend at Caesars Palace. Her name is Lisa Parsons, and she's coming up next here on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. But first, let's talk a little bit about the Poker Players Alliance, one of the other sponsors of this show, which is out there as an advocate for you, a nonprofit membership organization full of online and offline poker players just like you, people who love the game and want to see support for it. That's why Lee Russo, the Poker Players Alliance state director, has been fighting in Washington State and unfortunately just lost in a court of appeals about 8 days ago, in a ruling that continues to make online poker illegal in the state of Washington. But on the other hand, PPA is also fighting in the state of Florida, and they may be making some progress there in getting rid of that ridiculous $100 buy-in limit in the Florida poker rooms. They may be able to get rid of that and get some real poker going on down there, although I heard a funny story from a woman who runs one of those Seminole poker rooms in Florida. She says when the room opens up at 10 o'clock in the morning, everybody's only allowed to buy in for $100 when they sit down at the table. So the 10 regulars come every morning to start the game, and they sit down, and on the first hand, everybody goes all in, and seat one wins the $1,000. Then they all buy in for another $100, and they all go in, and seat two wins the $1,000.
Okay, I'm not following this. I wonder what happens the third time.
All the way around the table, now everybody's got $1,000, and they can play some deep stake.
I'm starting to see a pattern here.
they play some deep stack poker at that point. Of course, what I'm thinking is I want to go to this place, beat those other guys to the table, take seat one, play one hand, and leave.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, the PPA needs your help, and you can find out about the Poker Players Alliance by going to their website, ppa.org. This is the Lumiere Plays Final Table with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips. Back in a moment on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Paul Harris and St. Louis's own poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips, on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
We're live in the Lumiere Place Poker Room in downtown St. Louis, a great place to play poker. Right after the game, Dennis and I will be jumping into the 5-10 game here. They've got 1-3 games going on. They've got 3-6 games going on. It's a terrific place to play poker right in the heart of downtown St. Louis, just a few blocks from the ballpark. So if you go to a Cardinal game this season, you can walk right up the street and come in here and play in Lumiere. Or if you're a slot player, they've got tons of those and table games and all the rest, plus great restaurants. The Burger Bar has some of the best burgers
absolutely.
In town, plus the Savoy, a terrific Italian restaurant in Asia, terrific Asian food there. And you'll have a good time when you come down to Lumiere Place, and we're happy they sponsor us and our home for the final table every week. Remember, next Tuesday, the show moves to 7 o'clock on Tuesday nights, or you can get the podcast at thechipleader.com. Joining us now is one of the people who was part of the Dream Team event in Las Vegas this weekend. Dennis and Joe McGowan and I made up the guys, and Lisa Parsons and Maura Harris, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the third woman's name.
The third person that we ended up with a replacement. The other one was unable to make it out there and such.
Okay.
But Lisa is the person that made me lose my voice. I'm going to blame her for all this. I had to sit there cheering her on and everything. It's all your fault, Lisa, okay?
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Yeah. Well, she ended up finishing 12th in the tournament, played some great hands out there. We talked about them, analyzed them a little bit, and I have a lot of respect for her game.
And Lisa, by the way, also came in 76th at the main event last year, the next-to-last woman knocked out at that event. Congratulations on that. And by the way, you know, we kept talking about a men's team and a women's team, and you were the next-to-last woman knocked out of the event. Tiffany Michelle was the last woman knocked out, but you were next to last. Do you mind being referred to as a female poker player?
You know, I really, it doesn't really bother me so much. The thing that bothers me is the second to last woman standing.
Oh.
That's the only line that bothers me.
Okay.
You'd like to be the last person standing, regardless of gender.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, but the whole female poker player thing, it doesn't really bother me.
Tell us a little bit about the Dream Team event this weekend and the last hand in particular in which you were knocked out by Jamie Gold.
Oh, okay. Well, Jamie actually didn't knock me out.
Oh.
But the hand that that I played with Jamie Gold was, I would have knocked him out. He pushed in the cutoff seat after a long speech, one of Jamie's famous speeches. He did a long speech about how they had to outlast 8 more people to win the entire team championship. And first hand he looks at, he pushes all in. So obviously he's trying to make me think that he's got a monster.
And I'm sure from the last day and a half, you knew he had nothing but a quality hand to push all in, right?
Yeah, right. So, but in all honesty, I would have probably let it go. I was in the big blind and I looked down at ace queen offsuit. And I had 160,000, and he only had 45, so I called. And the dealer does the flop, and the door card, I see my queen, and then the dealer, oh, by the way, Jamie has Jack-8 offsuit.
Jack-8 offsuit he pushed in.
Yes, yes. And I wasn't surprised when I saw it, actually. But I saw my queen in the door, and the dealer spreads the card, and here comes the 10 and the 9. And Jamie goes crazy, of course.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. No.
And that didn't cripple you completely, but that was certainly something that knocked you down a little bit, and then you lasted and made it to 12th place. And Jamie and his team, including his girlfriend Ashley, ended up being the team that lasted the longest and won the team side of it. So congratulations again to them. I want to go back to the whole female poker player thing, because when you and I were talking this weekend, we were hanging out, us Dennis Phillips Dream Teamers were hanging out a lot this weekend, and you were telling me about how guys at the table play differently against you than they do against guys at the table. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, I've talked to a lot of male poker players about this, and not all of them, everybody has their own idea about how they play against women. Some guys avoid women because they can't read women at the table. Other guys tell me that they will re-raise a woman just to test her. And if she comes back over the top, they'll back away. So, you know, there's a couple ideas out there, and majority of men, I think, will come after a woman more.
And what do they learn after they've played with you for a couple of hours?
They've learned they really can't come after me for very long.
Because you will come back over the top, Adam.
Yes, I will.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, Lisa's a little dynamo. If you've ever played against her, you definitely want to be sitting to her right and not her left. I'll tell you that. You try and invent places to steal pots, I'll swear. And you do a very, very good job of it, by the way. But I had the privilege of playing with her for about a day in the World Series. Saw her play a lot of hands. We got involved in a couple of different hands. I got lucky enough to flop a set one time, and she was, unfortunately, a good enough player to get away from her end.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow. It was fun playing out there, and that's why I had her on my team, and that's why I'd love to have her on my team again. I just did the calculation. I was curious. the hand you had, ace-queen, versus his hand, jack-eight, you know you're a dominant favorite on it, but it is only a two-thirds, one-third. Any random two cards there almost is a two-thirds, one-third.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually a 34.8% chance to win that pre-flop on it. Of course, flopping the set was ridiculous, but the straight.
Yeah.
But anyhow, just was kind of curious. I thought I'd check it out. I knew it was in that range.
Lisa, before we go, do you play a lot of tournaments in the course of a year? Are you going to be playing, for instance, in the month of April? I know you live in Las Vegas. Will you be playing a lot of things leading up to, like, the WPT Championship at Bellagio and other things like that, and then a lot of events this summer at the WSOP?
Oh, yeah. I used the Wynn Classic a bit as a warm-up to this month, and, of course, I'm going to use April Bellagio and World Series of Poker at Caesars for a warm-up to the World Series of Poker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be playing a lot of tournaments next few months.
Well, I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about you. We just wanted to have you on here for a few minutes to congratulate you again on being the last part of our team to make it in the Dream Team event this weekend and your major success last summer in the WSOP main event. And if I were a betting man, and it turns out I am, I would put my money on you going forward.
Hey, and one other thing, too. A lot of people don't know about your secret life, shall we say, as a writer and everything on it. Why don't you just give us a little lowdown of what you've been writing lately and what you've developed there?
Well, in the past, I was writing a lot of thrillers, and I have a Hollywood agent, and my scripts have gone out on spec. I've had a lot of meetings with on production lots and everything, and almost sold a couple screenplays, and now I'm working on a coming-of-age drama. And about four Midwestern girls that are on their way to a Madonna concert, and about them going, overcoming their issues together as friends.
Oh, I thought it was about Mike Matisau growing up.
No, she does stick with fantasy, but you know.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. All right.
Well, it'll be very cool, Lisa, if in a few years we can say, if you're back on the show as a guest and you're the only person we know to win both a WSOP bracelet and an Oscar.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
All right, cool.
Thanks for your time, Lisa. It's always a pleasure.
Okay,
take care, Lisa.
Thanks, Dennis. Okay, see ya, bye.
Lisa Parsons joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. This portion of the show brought to you by PokerStars, where you can play against Dennis Phillips, or online, D.Phillips is his name.
Yeah, it's hard to find me. The avatar has a picture of me on it. I'm amazed they allow such an ugly thing on the site.
In your Cardinals cap, right?
In my Cardinals cap,
yeah.
Absolutely. But I was playing there over the weekend. I'll be playing there this weekend. Come on down, guys, anytime you want a game with me. PokerStars.net. 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Every game you can imagine, it's there. It is the largest poker room in the world. And they have the largest number of free-to-play tournaments anywhere on the Internet. If you want to learn the game, if you want to specialize in one game, if you just want to kind of tweak your own game, get on there and play. Play against me, play against the other pros, play against the guys from all over the world. PokerStars.net. Find the PokerStar in you.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. Back after this.
In just two short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And by the way, Amini's, a sponsor of the show, will be the home of a poker tournament coming up in May for the Albert Pujols Foundation, which Dennis is involved in, and we'll tell you more about that going forward. But where are you off to this week?
Actually, I'm going back to Vegas for a while, and it's a very, very busy month. I will be down in Argentina playing an LAPT for the Poker Stars. I will be, it looks like now, in Monte Carlo at the end of this month, too.
Very cool.
That's why it was kind of neat talking with today
Gavin.
With Gavin on it and everything.
Yeah.
But there's several major tournaments going on in Las Vegas I'll be playing at, Argentina, Monte Carlo, online with Poker Stars. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we do have a number of charities coming up, including the Albert Pujols one and one for the juvenile diabetes.
You can read all about Dennis's adventures on his blog at thechipleader.com. And don't forget, next Tuesday, this show moves back 1 hour. We will start next week where we are letting off tonight at 7 o'clock Central Time. Tuesday nights at 7 will be the new time slot for the Lumiere Place Final Table. You can get the podcasts on thechipleader.com. This is 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.